Welcome to Celebrating Whole Health, a program focusing on remembering, reinvigorating, and creating a renaissance of relationship-centered whole person healthcare. Each week, we profile the work of a nurse dedicated to providing compassionate, patient-centered care. I'm your host, Georgiana Donadio, director of the New England School of Whole Health Education in Boston.
Today, my guest is Sonia Simpson, who is a past president of the American Holistic Nurses Association. She has a long resume of executive directorships, wonderful opportunities as instructors, a public health nurse, a staff nurse, director of nursing. I mean, Sonia, we could go on forever. You have done an incredible amount of nursing over the course of the last 40 years. Welcome to the show, and welcome, and I want to welcome the audience because I'm delighted that there. We know we've got a lot of people with us today. We want to know a little bit about, because it is so diverse, you have all kinds of honors and awards, and I mean, you have just a wonderful full resume. We want to just share a little bit of the practical nursing and the training that you've received, and then we do want to talk about some of the very rich aspects of your nursing experience. So if you want to start talking about where were you trained initially, and you know, how did your process as a nurse evolve?
Well, I had my basic education in a baccalaureate program at Syracuse University, and at the time that I was going through that, getting a baccalaureate in nursing was something that was very new. I had a very mother with foresight who said, "This is the way for you to go." And it was a very interesting experience going through the educational process, because the Syracuse University was changing their curriculum to be less book-focused and more holistically focused. And so our class was the transition group, which made it really a wonderful experience. And you had to learn to be very flexible and adaptable, but it was a great program. And then over the years, and I had some experience, and then about 10 years later, I got my master's degree in nursing from the University of Florida in Gainesville, Florida.
Well, it's very interesting to hear from you that in 1961, when you were going through your bachelor's program, that they were making a transition to holistic nursing.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because we've spoken to several holistic nurses, and the general comment seems to be that the nursing curriculum itself is holistic in nature because of the Florence Nightingale philosophy. What kinds of things were they adding at that point that was, say, different or new from the more current, at that moment in time, nursing training?
Well, first of all, in a lot of baccalaureate programs, you take, like, prerequisites, and then you get into nursing, and we were right from the beginning melding between nursing and liberal arts. And so, for instance, in the understanding people, we had courses in anthropology, sociology, communications, and so forth. So we were looking not only at the body systems of the lung, the heart, anatomy and physiology, and so forth, we were looking at the total person in terms of the experience of age changes, location changes, and so forth. It was a very rich experience, and I didn't realize how wonderful that was until my nursing career.
Well, that is unusual to hear that in the early 60s that there was this concept of wholeness or of looking at the curriculum from a whole person perspective. That's quite wonderful, and I'm sure you really enjoyed that. What about your master's degree? You took a master's of science in nursing. Was that also a holistic-oriented program?
No, it was a very different experience. I had started out wanting to take a master's degree in public health nursing, and the program folded, and then the dean of the college died, and there was a lot of sort of chaos. So I started out my curriculum basically in psychiatry, nursing, psychiatric nursing, and I didn't like that because it was very oriented to the chronic problems of schizophrenia rather than the prevention and the whole person point of view. So I just changed my curriculum, and they allowed me to be very, creative about it, nursing administration, and just kind of put my own curriculum together.
Oh, isn't that grand? Yeah. And then you have worked your way from staff nurse, public health nurse. You were an instructor in maternal child care.
Right.
You did everything from director of nursing to vice president of nursing. You even worked for JACO at one point, and,
yes.
and that must have been a very intriguing experience. You also went on to be the executive director of the Minnesota Nurses Association, executive director of the American Holistic Nurses Certificate Corporation, and you are currently the executive director of the Central District Health Department, I believe in the area that you are currently living, is that correct?
In Nebraska, yes.
In Nebraska.
Third largest health department in the state.
Right. It says the Central District Health Department. Where is that located in Nebraska?
It's located in Grand Island, and it includes three counties. Before, when I first took the job, we were just one county, and then we added two counties and became a district instead of a city-county health department.
So you are so correct to say that nursing has allowed such a wide range of multidiscipline tasks for you. Of all of these things, and I'm sure that the current one you're doing is one of your favorites, but what is the area of specialty, or is there an area of specialty for you that particularly grabs your passion, or do you love all of it?
That's a very interesting question. I probably embrace holistic and health ministry as my passions in nursing at this point in my career. I'm a very good administrator. I'm very good at mentoring people and approaching my management from a very holistic perspective, looking at staff members, bringing out their passion and what they want to do, and kind of being like an orchestra leader as a manager. But I'm at the point where I don't want to do that, thinking about not doing that day-to-day management, but going more into holistic, integrative care, trying to make things happen on a national basis, and also on a local basis involved in developing health ministry programs.
And is that, I know that you also are the CEO of the Simpson Consulting. Is that the kind of work or the focus of your consulting organization?
Yes.
to reach out and to create some national changes and political changes in nursing?
Well, I think the national and political changes will come through with my presidency at the American Holistic Nurses Association and working with that from an organizational point of view and getting that organization to really be a part of what's happening in integrative care. On a personal level, Simpson Consulting, right now I'm entertaining a potential job change where I would be working with two people in the community here who approached me wanting to start a holistic healing center.
Oh, wow.
Mm. Yeah, it's a very unusual opportunity just kind of dropped in my lap.
How do you see, you're in Nebraska,
mm-hmm.
so you are in the heartlands of America?
Heartland of America, corn, agriculture,
yes.
Very traditional living,
right.
very traditional values.
Right, and here you are, this wonderfully holistic human being and nurse and administrator, and you're living in the heartlands of America that has a reputation for not necessarily embracing those values. Would you share with us, Sonia, what do you see in Nebraska or in the heartlands, what do you see as happening around holism?
Well, most of the holism is going on in the more metropolitan areas of Omaha. Actually, Omaha's probably more than Lincoln. And Grand Island is like the fourth largest city in the state. And what I have found over the 3 years that I've lived here is there are a lot of people that are interested but are afraid to talk about it. It's like going back to another era, and I've always been a change agent. Wherever I go, it's like I'm there to create change. So sometimes I wonder, how did I land in Nebraska? What am I here to do? And all of a sudden, like this opportunity just in the last 2 weeks had been given to me, like 3 years ago when I came, and now they're reentering again saying, we really need you to help us launch holistic care in this geographical part of the state.
Now, is this a medical organization that contacted you?
No. This is what's interesting. It's two women who are in mental health and are very holistically oriented that have approached me.
and they have already set up a corporation, and they're envisioning having a holistic center where they would have various integrative options available for clients and also to do an educational process. And as I was talking with them, I said, well, we don't want to roll it out with getting the medical community's permission because then it won't go. We just have to sort of let it evolve. And then they'll say, oh, well, this is new here.
Right.
And that's kind of how I've approached everything. It's from a very creative point of view.
But do you find that there are a lot of holistic practitioners in your area? I know that it's very big on the coast. I'm in the East Coast, and I know Bill is our producer is closer to the West Coast. He's out in Nevada, but towards the coastal areas, we see a lot of holistic practice. How is it in the middle of the country? Are there Reiki people and homeopaths and the like? Are they plenty in that area, or is it just coming into?
You'll find those kinds of workers in Omaha, but right here in Grand Island, you have probably the one thing you have are a lot of massage therapists. As far as the medical community is concerned, I'm very impressed. I'm going through chemotherapy for cancer now, and I'm very impressed with the oncologist that I'm working with because he is holistic. He is passionate about making sure that your experience is a positive one. He calls to see how you're doing. He's very different than any other physician I've been to, and I feel very blessed to have him come into my life at this point of critical health to myself.
Well, we want to hear much more about your physician and about your health journey. We're going to take a short break, Sonia, a two-minute break. When we come back, we can pick up where we left off. Don't go away.
Okay, so what do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers in their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. All right, so what do you get when you cross a barber and a chef? A meal with all the trimmings. And that's what they're serving at a local youth center. Local merchants came together with their community coalition to make people's lives a little better. Now, what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, happier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So with your civic group, club, PTA, even your employer, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
This is Richard Tyson. Most people think of the Shriners as a fun organization, but they have a serious side too. How do I know? Well, I'm a Shriner. Shriners Hospitals provide kids with expert medical care totally free of charge. And they combine orthopedic and burn care with progressive research and innovative teaching programs. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
We're back. This is Celebrating Whole Health, and this program focuses on reinvigorating, remembering, and creating a renaissance of relationship-centered whole person care. I'm your host, Georgiana Donadio. I'm the program director for the New England School of Whole Health Education in Boston. And with us today, we are speaking to Sonia Simpson. And Sonia has been sharing a lot of her experience and background with us in holistic nursing and holistic administration work that she's doing. And before we went to the break, you were sharing with us several things. One was about a wonderful physician that you are working with you now that you are on a personal health journey receiving chemotherapy, and we want to hear about your doctor and we want to hear about your journey. You were also talking about the presence of holistic services in the Nebraska area. So you can start, Sonia, wherever you want on either one of those topics.
Well, talking about my personal experience, I was diagnosed with cancer of the colon in May and had surgery. That was, of course, a very startling and life-defining experience for me. Fortunately, the lymph nodes were clean, but the recommendation from the physicians were to go through chemotherapy, which totally frightened me. And I do give a lot of
credit to the oncologist that I'm working with, because he came in my hospital room and talked to me about chemo and what my fright was about it. He didn't come in and just say, well, I think you should do this, and you know, basically this is what the chemo does. He came in from a very humanistic point of view and helped me through my fears of dealing with cancer and taking chemo. And I made the decision to take the chemo because I felt it, a year now from now, if the cancer is back, you'll look back and say, I never took that opportunity for this, what I call preventive aspect that I'm going through now. Mm-hmm. And the first day that I had chemo, I was frightened. I was crying. I was just a total wreck. And he came in and just held my hand, and he said, this is not a frightening experience. It'll be okay. You'll be just fine, and the nurses here will help you. And he's just so, you know, so kind, and that made a real big difference to me.
Oh, let's talk about kindness, because what you're describing is, it's so important. It sounds like it was a wonderful encounter for you to have with a physician. And today we hear so much about the lack of kindness from the medical community, not the nurses necessarily, but from the physicians and the surgeons and the technicians. How did this experience change maybe your own perception? Because I know you shared with me when we've had our conversations before the interview that in fact you were not really looking forward to this because you had concerns. Matter of fact, you had avoided a preventative procedure because you were concerned about the possible ramifications of perforation. How has this experience with your oncologist changed your own perception of medicine?
It makes me more positive. And actually, the surgeon that did the cancer colon surgery has been very kind and very personable, you know, not abrupt and so forth. And I did ask my oncologist one day, I said, how did you get to Nebraska? Because he's certified in oncology, hematology, and internal medicine. I said, how come you didn't select a medical center? And he said he wanted to come to a hospital where it wasn't so university-oriented, and he wanted to raise his children in a community that had more traditional values. And so from that, I knew what his value system was. And one of the things that's very interesting is he keeps asking me how did I approach this, because he sees such positive and sees such you know, like a vital person here. And he said, you know, tell me more about how you are gripping with this diagnosis, because so few cancer patients deal with it like you're dealing with it. And so we've just begun to share that.
Well, we want you to share that with us, because you have written, and we will get to talk about this, you've written a remarkable story called Healing, A Time for Reflection. And you are, in what you write in this story, dealing with your journey, your healing journey, in a remarkable way. And I know that what you're doing is important to all of us, because we will all be, if we are not already, on our own journey. So please, if you would, share with us how you have found the strength and the vitality and the spirituality, if you will, to deal with this invitation in a way that would invite your oncologist to even comment about it.
Well, first of all, I'm a certified holistic nurse, so I know and I understand holistic principles, and that's how I approach everything. What I realized just intuitively was that if I focus on the diagnosis cancer and think I have a limited time in life, that I'm not going to get anywhere. I need to look at what is this experience for you, what can this experience teach you, and go deeper within the self to say, what can you do to help yourself on your healing journey? And one of the things I've done is journaling, and looking back on my journaling, I can see how I've evolved in the healing process. The cancer center where I am at now has it looks at dealing with cancer from a very team approach point of view, and so I've taken advantage of whatever they have available to assist me in understanding this process that I'm going through. And I would say the other thing that's very, very important is having a deep spiritual identity. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're Buddhist or Jewish or Catholic. It's just having, dealing with your own faith journey within us, because within all experiences, especially health experiences, lies spiritual insight. So being quiet, going in and trying to deal with that. And the other thing I've done is use imagery. There's some wonderful tapes by Bella Ruth Nafferstack that are particular just for cancer and chemotherapy. And so I listen to those, which gets into imaging the chemo going into you as soldiers that are going to take these demons out, and a beautiful blue waterfall that's washing through your system. And you just keep listening to those tapes, and you image from a positive point of view that you're going to rid yourself of this kind of thing, and that you're going to become an even more whole person through this experience. And, you know, when I say the word cancer, it's like I don't even have it. I mean, it, you know, it's, I'm going through this, but I don't focus on the diagnosis.
Well, you brought something up that was very important. You said that there was some insight or information or perspective that this invitation of having this process that you're going through that is called cancer, that it provides you with an insight, it provides you with information. Have you discerned for yourself a particular piece of information about your life, about your nature, about how you are working or being in the world? Because I know that from the holistic nursing perspective, the spiritual and the psychosocial, that those are components that are revealed more deeply within the journey of illness. So has that happened for you, Sonia? And if so, would you share some of that with us?
Yeah, sure. I think what has come through to me as a, you know, what you look at, this gives you an opportunity to look at patterns that no longer serve you anymore. And the other concept is the body has a natural tendency towards healing. So those are just basic conceptual kinds of things. And when I look back at prior to cancer, I see my life was a lot of sacrifice. I came from a very sacrificial, you know, point of view, sacrificial with my children, with my husband, with everyone else came before I came. And although I was doing exercise and eating healthy, I wasn't really taking care of maybe the spiritual or emotional part of me. So this stops you in your tracks to say, I need to concentrate on me and what makes me tick. And one of the things comes through, do I want to do day-to-day operational administration as opposed to doing more creative work at this point in my life?
Isn't that a wonderful discovery?
Yes, it is. It is very very affirming. And, you know, I think I did mention to you that on this cancer journey, everything was going fine, and then I was on my bike in August, having a wonderful bike ride, feeling very free, and I had a freak bike accident where I broke my femur, so now I'm dealing with yet another surgical procedure, a walker cane, and being even more confined than I was before. So that's allowed me to go even deeper into myself to say, you know, what is it that's going to finally heal you here, and why did this happen to you, not that you're a victim? You have to get out of the victim mode.
Isn't it a remarkable thing that, I know as a nurse you have heard many times from patients that my cancer or my heart attack or my surgery was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Correct.
And that it has changed the course of my life and it has made me happier and healthier. And it sounds as if you have such a clear understanding of this process, but more than that, you know, it's one thing to understand that and, you know, kind of theoretically say, oh, well, this is a gift and this is an opportunity, but I think it is wonderful for us, and I know the audience hears this as well, to hear the centeredness that you bring to accepting and processing this journey of healing. And if you would share with us, we're going to take a break in just a moment, but when we come back, if you would share with us your own personal spiritual journey, your own personal value base that allows you to put all of this into a very real living reality and perspective for you. As you said, you know, it doesn't matter what faith you are, but we all want to know and we all want to share what value base you're using or you have been using to create this
peace and this centeredness that is so evident in your dealing with your illness. We're going to go away for 2 minutes, Sonia, but we'll be right back, okay?
Hey, you're the new tech support guy, right?
Right. Dave Lewis, man. Good to meet you.
You too. You know, the way these things crash, you're going to be busy.
Eh, that's all right. Hey, listen, I'm going to hit the men's room, okay? I'll see you around, I'm sure.
Okay, but you can't go in there.
Executive washroom, huh?
No. Can't you see the sign? That bathroom is whites only.
Whites only?
Yeah. Just 1 second. Hey, Karen, where's that colored bathroom again? If you go through that exit, there's a staircase. I think it's up on 3.
Okay. Thanks.
Imagine what America would be like today if Martin Luther King never had a dream. It's time to honor his memory. Visit buildthedream.org to learn about the Martin Luther King National Memorial Project in Washington, D.C. You can help him stand among our nation's heroes and preserve his message of hope for future generations. Visit buildthedream.org. Together, we can help make history.
Well, when she was born, it was like the 4th of July and New Year's Eve rolled into one.
Jack and Karen talk about their 6-year-old, Angela.
She's a great kid.
Oh, yeah.
But we noticed she was struggling a bit in school.
See, I wanted to get information, you know, just in case we needed it.
I resisted. I figured she'd grow out of it. But Karen was right. Turns out Angela's a bright kid. She just learns differently.
Right. You know, I tell any parent who thinks there's a learning problem, get help ASAP.
I mean, who knows your child better than you?
That's right.
If you think there's something wrong, do something right now. Get help. For free information on how to help your child, visit www.focusonlearning.org, www.focusonlearning.org, or call 1-888-478-MIND. Do it for your child. Do it for yourself. But do it now. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coordinated Campaign for Learning Disabilities.
And we are back with Sonia Simpson. Sonia is a holistic nurse extraordinaire, and she has been sharing her life and her nursing and her journey in an illness that presented itself as opportunity to her. And before the break, we were speaking about the core, the center of Sonia that has allowed her to be so graceful with this opportunity and on this journey. So, Sonia, if you would share with us how you have been able to be at such peace and in such a centered place with your healing.
Well, I think my experience as a parish nurse in Arizona for 2 years and working with a lot of people there and the experiences that they went through taught me a lot about how they heal, and I was working with them in their own healing process so that they would become more empowered to heal, not just based on the medicine. And I think that's one of the things I see in the healthcare system is, and I see some of these patients in the cancer center, is they take the chemo, they do what the doctor says, but they don't get involved in their own healing process. And I was reading an article the other day which says we need relationship-centered care which invites the patient to the center of their healing and wellness. And I couldn't agree with that more in terms of the fact that, you know, healing isn't just what the physician does. It is your own self, and I feel very strongly that if you have a strong spiritual identity, you can go to that core. My spiritual identity is Christian-based, and, you know, I went through my rage of, God, why are you doing this to me? I don't deserve it. Please, you know, give me the answer as to what I'm supposed to learn from this experience. And as I wrote in my article, part of your healing process is learning to have wait power, W-A-I-T power, waiting and hearing for the answer to come to you, that not all the answers are going to come, boom, 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 and just being quiet and letting that happen.
Speaking of your story, which is just wonderful, and one of the things that struck me was the wait power that was so wonderful and mm-hmm. so beautifully written. Would you share with us, as Dion previously shared some of her writing with us, would you share the parts of your wonderful, well, it's wonderful in the sense of how much you shared of yourself and how poignant it was. Would you share the pieces of your story that are most meaningful to you?
Well, I said, you know, listening for the right moment to allow truth to penetrate and move us is very important. And most people tend to think that doing, if they're taking their pills and taking the chemo, is better, is best, rather than knowing that being receptive and hearing is what is needed to heal. It's being quiet and learning that being receptive to the moment and the experience of the moment, and knowing that the healing process is like a roller coaster. You have your up days and you have your down days. So allowing the tears to come up from past memories or whatever it is that makes you want to cry, and crying and getting it out of your system, journaling, imaging, any of those kinds of things, it's so empowering because you're participating in your own healing process. It's not somebody else just doing something to and for you.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it so true that we're used to a healthcare system that is about doing things to you?
Mm-hmm.
Medicine, God love it because it's a wonderful gift and it is such a blessing. The technology and the science is such truly a service to humankind. But one of the aspects of it that seems to get in the way of authentic healing is that those of us who are in the healing professions are trained to do things to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I know as a holistic nurse, it must have been a very interesting almost conflict for you to, on one hand, say, well, what can I do? What should I do? What should they do? What should I have done? And then to stand still in that very peaceful, quiet, centered place. Can you talk about that journey? And I mean, did you go through a period where you maybe panicked a little and wanted to do things to get well?
Oh my, yes. I panicked. I was very fearful when the diagnosis came, and part of the hospitalization was just getting through that. But then coming home, it was dealing with the diagnosis, and you become very focused on any little change in your body that might mean the cancer is back. And I'm into counseling, and my counselor's, you know, I panicked one weekend, and she said, I want you to put affirmations on your bathroom mirror all over the house that says, I am releasing anxiety, I am releasing pain, I'm releasing past patterns that no longer serve me. Whatever it is, you're releasing, and you're not, you know, instead of taking in all of this panic. So she's been a big help, and my sister just happened to be visiting at the time all of this happened, and she is a very deep spiritual nature, so talking with her helped in the process also. I found myself sort of getting back into old patterns once I started feeling better, and I really firmly believe this femur break was to make me stop and really look at past patterns that no longer serve me.
Isn't
and
it
being more involved in the healing process?
Isn't that remarkable that you know, you were getting better and it looked as if you might be returning to some of those patterns, and
yeah.
And your divine nature, yourself, your unconscious divine self offered you another opportunity,
mm-hmm.
to take an even deeper look. I mean, isn't it interesting that you had a freak bike accident when you were doing so well and feeling so well? I know that you shared this with me, that you have a trust in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to speak about, you put it so beautifully, that about your feelings about trusting everything that's happened.
It's in all in how you approach it from a mental point of view. For instance, the walker that I have, instead of seeing it as an impediment that you want to throw away and say, why am I chained to this, is looking at the walker as embracing you to assist you in your healing process in mending the broken femur. It's thinking of all of these adjunctive things as assisting you and knowing it's time limited. I mean, it's like it's only a couple of weeks. It seems like a century for somebody like me whose process is best by being active. I process best what is bothering me by walking, biking, swimming, moving, and this is teaching me to learn to process in a very new way, being quiet so it's not doing every single moment, moving, moving, moving.
Now, I would like to touch on a subject that normally is avoided when we're talking about diagnoses and cancer, but the fear of death. Sonia, we all as human beings, I mean, one of the things that I think is the cruelest thing about being human is that unlike the
the plants and the birds and the bees and the animals, to our knowledge, we're the only living creatures that are consciously aware that our life will come to an end, and we don't even know when that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So when something like this happens, the innate survival instinct, the fear of death, mm-hmm. has to become the overwhelming anxiety that is triggered over and over again, as you said, when you become aware of your body and these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most important thing for all of us that we would love for you to share with us. How have you, what specific thoughts, and I'm referring to some of the beautiful things that you've written in your story, what specific thoughts or experiences have helped you to let go of the anxiety of, you know, possibly looking at, you know, before you began healing, and letting go of that anxiety of death?
Well, I have to share with you an experience that happened when I was just about to graduate from my baccalaureate program in nursing. I was going to work as an LPN during the summer, and they wanted me to take a chest x-ray. And I said, well, I just had a chest x-ray. Well, we'll do it again. You know, it's free. So I had it, and the radiologist called me and said that they found something on the chest x-ray, and I went down and talked with them, and they found a tumor in my chest. And I was young, I was 22, and I thought, you know, this can't be. I mean, I just went through that whole shock. And he told me that it probably was a very virulent sarcoma, and I would only have 5 years to live.
Oh, my.
And it was 2 weeks before I could get the surgeon that I wanted. So I had to sit with that. And so learning that, I mean, at a very early age, I went through the anger, this can't be happening. And then the night before surgery, a minister came in and was praying with my roommate or the other person in the room, and he prayed with me, and all I said was, God, help me to accept whatever the outcome is. Give me the strength. It's up to you. It turned out to be a non-cancerous tumor,
and I
had a very long recovery period after that. It was a very invasive procedure because the tumor was attached to many of the vital organs in the chest. So when this cancer diagnosis came up, I raged at God and said, this can't be. I've been through enough. Now I'm going through this again. And went back to my earlier experience. And in terms of death, it is the inevitable thing that's going to happen to everybody. And the mystery is we don't know when it's going to happen. And so my prayers were, help me to accept whatever the outcome is. And if you give me life again, and this does not result in death immediately, then give me the answer as to what it is I'm supposed to be doing, what it is I'm supposed to be being about, and if this is another journey, help me to understand that. And just having the faith and knowing that in time the answers will come.
What a powerful prayer, Sonia.
Yeah.
That is so touching. It reminds me of the story. I know you've heard these stories. You've witnessed these stories.
Mm-hmm.
In Boston, there was a mother who had a very, very sick child, 12 years old, and in and out with leukemia. I mean, it wasn't looking good. Bone marrow wasn't taking, you know, the whole horror story. And the mother had been praying and clinging to this child and begging God to heal this child. And it had gotten so bad for the boy that she saw the pain and the suffering and the agony that the child was in, and she went to the chapel and she changed her prayers.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, God, I don't want you necessarily to keep my son alive for me. I want you to release him from this pain. I've been selfish because my wanting to keep him here has kept him in so much pain, and I pray that you release him and that you send him back to your beautiful self and comfort me in his loss. Well, you know the story. You know the natural conclusion, just like in your story.
Mm-hmm.
There was a remarkable turnaround, and the boy is still alive today in his late 30s and doing quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those stories that circulates in the Boston area here because we have Dana-Farber and we have so many wonderful oncology hospitals. So your prayer was very powerful. We're going to take a break in just a moment, but when we come back, we'd love to hear you talk about what you believe about prayer, about holistic living, and how in your nursing experience you may or may not have witnessed these kinds of things, and what your thoughts about that are for us as audience to become enriched more with a deeper understanding of prayer. So we're going to take a break. We'll be gone for 2 minutes. So don't go away, audience. We'll be right back with Sonia Simpson.
Hear that? That's our little Madison. In just a few weeks, she's going to pop into this world a real, living, breathing person. Now, listen to this. That's the sound of me doing nothing to help out with her future because I don't bother to support after-school programs. But it's not just my own child's opportunities I'm shrugging off. It's yours, too. Because I found it more convenient to take after-school programs for granted. A few minutes a day of not thinking about kids can help take away their opportunities for sports, the arts, all kinds of things that can help them get a step up in life. Hey, little Maddie, did you know that violent crime triples in the hours after school? Daddy's turning his back on after-school programs. That helps put more kids on the streets during peak violent hours. If you want to be negligent like I am, don't call this number, 1-866-KIDS-TODAY. And remember not to log on to afterschoolnow.org. Right, sweet pea?
After-school programs. Ignore them and they'll go away. A public service message brought to you by the After School Alliance, the Mott Foundation, and the Ad Council.
AIDS has created over 14 million orphans worldwide. That's the equivalent of every child under 5 in America, with nobody to watch over them. To help, please go to apathyislethal.org. AIDS is preventable. Apathy is lethal.
Brought to you by the United Nations Foundation and the Ad Council.
And we're back with Sonia Simpson. And before the break, we asked Sonia a whole lot of questions about her prayer experience and her ideas and thoughts and beliefs about prayer. And we do know of the contemporary work of Dr. Larry Dossey and several other researchers who have evidenced quite clearly that the intentionality and the energy or the vibration of the thoughts of prayer have a profound effect on our physical body. So, Sonia, if you would you share with us your, I know you have a tremendous information and wisdom in this area and experience in this area. Would you spend some time talking to us about prayer and what you've witnessed as a holistic nurse?
Sure. First of all, I believe very strongly in the power of prayer. And, you know, it has to start with you really believe that that really works. And when my cancer diagnosis came about, I was overwhelmed with the number of emails and phone calls and cards, especially from the Holistic Nurses Association members, many of them I didn't know, where they were including me in their prayer chains or their spiritual identity, and they were, it just felt like I was surrounded by such powerful prayer from so many people from across the country that I felt very protected, and I just knew that the answers would come. In terms of prayer in my practice or seeing how it works, I've seen, first of all, in parish nursing when I did that, I always would end my visit with the client and say, I'd like to end with a prayer, and if you would like, and all of them always wanted it. And so I would just sit with them and hold their hand and pray with them for healing or whatever it is. And I just knew from that experience that it made a difference. It made a difference with them. I could see the healing going on and so forth. In the hospital, I think a lot gets lost in the frenetic activity of the next IV, the next treatment, the next this, the next that. And there isn't the quiet moment. But I did have clergy visit me in both my hospitalizations, and it didn't matter how cluttered or frenetic it was. You know, I always asked them for prayer, and they would hold my hand. And I would feel very peaceful after that.
Well, I know that you're familiar with the work of Peggy Huddleston in Prepare for Surgery, Heal Faster, and the whole pre-surgical and post-surgical wrapping of prayer around a person. It sounds like you had one of those experiences. Did it feel as if you were blanketed in love and prayer?
Yes, and the fact that I kept getting, you know, the cards and the emails, and, you know, it wasn't just a card with the signed name. It was a very personal message or a Bible verse or a bookmark with something wonderful on it. And in my healing process, I've kept all of those cards, and I keep going back to the basket and rereading them and just feeling this wonderful presence around me of the support of the healing prayers of everyone. And in my interaction with them, either by phone or email, I always say to them, please continue in prayer because it's important to me. So I just know that that's occurring.
Well, it's a wonderful, I think, experience to have that. It's an affirmation for many of us. I know sometimes I go through periods where I really have my faith crises, and I start to question if, you know, is there something bigger out there? And when you have an experience like you've had, it's so affirming on a deep spiritual and that untouchable place in our lives that can't see God and can't touch God. But when we have these experiences, we are affirmed in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And Sonia, I'm not going to let you get away without talking about this story more because it's so wonderful. You wrote something, and I'm going to read this to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, the Chinese symbol for crisis involves two words, danger and opportunity. This insight led me to question at a very soul level, what are the opportunities and health challenges that I was facing, rather than focus upon the danger of the cancer diagnosis. What would be very helpful is for you to describe, if you would, what was the biggest opportunity that has evolved out of your illness, and if you would share that more specifically in detail about, like, your professional life, because you've told us that you've been invited into opening up this holistic health center. Do you think that your experience has empowered and enabled you to participate in a different way in that kind of a project?
Yes, very much so, because I believe that sometimes illness comes because we are not our own true selves, and that we internalize a lot of things, and that can cause disruption in our body systems and just not being in tune with our body systems. And I think that this journey that I'm on is giving me an opportunity to look at me again, to say, what is it that makes me tick? What is it that I want to do? How can I share my gifts, with the world? And so that's just been, you know, part of the journey that I'm on. There is one of the things in Belarus Navrasek's tapes where she said, it is time to be fully well and to again share my gifts with the world. She goes through about how, you know, you shouldn't be on the negative and gives you affirmations. And she says, it is time to be fully well and to again share my gifts with the world, to love and appreciate who I really am. And that really struck me in the imagery, and I keep listening to that tape. If you listen to it enough, you internalize. That's what some of the message is here.
Well, it sounds like, and I'll just ask you to comment, do you think that the job opportunity or the project, this wonderful holistic health center opportunity, do you think that that's part of the answer to prayer and part of maybe the purpose of why you've been on the journey?
Right, and I just have helped one of the churches here, just sort of serendipitously came to me, help them put a health ministry program together, and the minister called me last night to say that the council approved it and would I continue working with them. And it's like, it was so easy to do. It just seemed so natural to do. And that was basically in the time between the cancer diagnosis and the femur accident that came about.
That opportunity actually, it almost seemed to punctuate the experience in a sense and kind of bring forth an even deeper spirituality out of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take our last break, and when we come back, you have a wonderful quote from Khalil Gibran that is written into your story. And when we come back, Sonia, if you would be good enough to read that to the audience and talk about the meaning of that for you, because it's so touching. I got goosebumps when I read your story, and I said, wow, isn't that just so meaningful to all of us that each and every day we really need to reflect on that thought. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back, and we'll hear more from Sonia Simpson.
Hello?
Hello, Mrs. Stewart. I'm calling about your gas bill. Yeah, I know. I'm late.
Mrs. Stewart, we need to receive some money in the next week.
I understand. I do. I'm working two jobs and doing everything I can. I mean...
Let's get a glass of water, Mommy.
Oh, I'll be there in a minute, Lisa.
Mrs. Stewart?
I'm really trying here. It's just that things are a little difficult right now.
Mommy, the water got on my picture.
Okay, honey, okay.
Do you have our address, Mrs. Stewart?
Yes, I do.
Heat or food? One in five American children faces hunger because of decisions like this. To help, call 1-800-FEED-KIDS or visit feedingchildrenbetter.org. Hunger, a choice no one should have to make. A public service message brought to you by America's Second Harvest, Feeding Children Better, and the Ad Council.
And we're back for our final few minutes with Sonia Simpson, who has so kindly and generously shared a very important and personal story and journey that she has been on for the past year or so. Sonia, before the break, I asked when we came back if you would be so kind as to read that wonderful quote and passage that you wrote in your story and then share with us the meaning of that for you.
Well, Bill Gibran, in the book The Prophet, I quoted, "When I planted my pain in the field of patience, it bore fruits of happiness." And, you know, pain can be physical pain and emotional pain. And what's interesting is that most of the post-diagnosis cancer recovery period, I felt emotional pain. I had no physical pain at all. With the surgery for the femur, I had a tremendous physical pain and emotional pain, so I had both. But when you actually go through and move through and feel that, whether it's crying or actual pain or whatever it is, and you feel that and you just get it out of your system and you acknowledge that there is pain here, it just lifts you to a greater level of moving into the moment, learning to live in the moment, not in the past, not in the future, but at this very moment in time. I'm grateful that I'm living here for another day, and what am I going to experience today instead of worrying about what's going to happen next month? And so then you move to a greater level of happiness.
Well, mindfulness is certainly an extraordinary invitation to that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I thank you so much for putting that in your story and sharing your story with us, because I think that it means so much to all of us to witness to you, your story, to witness to each other. And when we share these incredibly important journeys in our lives, we all become richer and happier and healthier. Now, I'm not going to let you leave us unless you promise that you will come back and down the road of peace, you will share with us not only your personal journey with your wellness and your healing, but we want to hear more about holistic health in the heartlands of Nebraska. So, Sonia, it has been a joy and a pleasure. I know I speak for the audience as well as for myself when I say that it is nurses like yourself who are the hands and hearts of healing. And we want very much with this radio program to reach out across the country to invite nurses to share their voice, to share their stories, to share their passion, and to create a renaissance of relationship-centered, loving, compassionate health care, such as you have shared with us today. Thank you so much for being part of the program, and God bless, and have an extraordinary journey.
Right, and I just want to leave on this note that I journaled the other day where I said our medical model needs to be reshaped around the power of the heart.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you, Sonia.
You're welcome.